Luba Mayakiso also joining us on the line. Good morning, Luba. How are you? How's Cape Town?
Wet and cold, Howard.
I'm starting to see, and you've spoken about it very openly with us, about your own experience when you were sent from I think the Eastern Cape to a private school, you and your brother, some of the racist experiences that you've had. We're starting to see a lot of the private schools, including bishops, coming out with a lot of statements, a lot of people saying, talking about their experience around racism. Can you give us your thoughts on this, your thoughts, your experience, and your reaction to what is happening at the moment?
Compared to, let's say, my time in the early 80s, there was no social media for me. And certainly the advantage that the kids have today is that there are more black kids per school. So if you look at my story, I was the only kid in primary school, my brother only kid in high school. So you didn't have a support group. So whatever you endured and you moved on. And I think what my generation did was to be able to move forward. We kind of just buried the trauma and put on a smile and move forward. You know, I said in a post I wrote the other day that being a boarder, you didn't have a father who would call you at the end of the day, would pick you up from school and say, son, how was your day? Or would give you a call and say, how was your day? Because he wasn't aware of what I was facing. So you were kind of on your own to deal with it compared to the kids of today. You know, remarkably, I put a post and then an old schoolmate, he was a few grades behind me, Jonathan, you know, he posted on my page that, you know, I'm really sorry about what happened and I've not really found a way to deal with it. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, you know, a bunch of us kids were sitting and calling each other the K-word. And then you walked in and I called you by that name. And he says, I'm really sorry. Now, Howard, I can't for the life of me recall that. And I think that's for me, the problem is that so much happened to us that you buried it. And the way you could move forward was to almost suppress it so deep that it almost didn't exist. Now, when I look at my kids, and I think this is where the worry is for me, because I've looked at our youngest is 2, is 9, so he's not really caught up in this. But our 26-year-old who went to Herschel, for instance, Herschel put out, I think on last Tuesday, you know, they went to the black page and they tried to support, you know, Black Lives Matter. But the backlash they got from the kids was violent. And the kids said, how dare you, you know, you associate yourself with this. And the school said, well, we'll try and do something. The kids said, no, you're not qualified. So when I listened to my daughter, I mean, she started writing down things that happened to her. She's on her list is on number 50. And I didn't know that it was so extensive. So yesterday we said to her, give us one idea. And she says, you know, you go to school and somebody says, oh, can I touch your hair? And, you know, it might be curiosity, but it's not read in the same way. Why do you want to touch my hair? You know, what's so special? You know, that somehow I'm like some freak animal that you must touch. So when I listened to my oldest daughter, she's got issues. She's dealing with them differently. And I've seen that now, even at St. Andrews that I went to, it started to flare up there. The 16-year-old is angry, incredibly angry. And this is what I suspected. So that generation feels that we've been too complacent. We've kind of just sat on the trauma and not really dealt with it. And they're saying it's time to deal with it. So when we had a discussion last week, she was saying to us, you know what? America must burn it. Burn it down to the ground. And I'm like, excuse me. She says, yes, burn it. And then if it was built on black hands, who cares? Who's going to tell us what to do with it? Just burn the whole country. We'll start over again. That's the kind of raw anger that's there. You know, her mom was having a discussion with her and said, but the looting. I said, mom, what about the looting? You're missing the point. Why are you focusing on the looting? So the anger is palpable that you're picking up in the younger generation. And I think now social media is allowing that to be expressed, which we didn't have. So, I mean, the bishops, it's the current group of matriculants who come out and condemn the school. So I think the private schools are going to have their work cut out. I mean, there's an incident I read this morning before coming online of a school in Parklands, where in grade 7, a teacher put an online assignment and said, you know, here's your assignment, put together a slave show. It's now 16-something. Make it fun. It's a fun event, the teacher said. Oh, and obviously people were angry. I mean, what do you mean it's a fun event? You know, make it fun. Make it interesting. Mm. And again, the school is saying the teacher meant well. And I think it's those insensitivities that are really going to land schools in hot water, that people need to think a lot more today about what they say than they would previously. And sitting with my kids, and I've certainly listened to them, and they've given me a whole lot of incidents where they've said, "Dad, do you remember this?" Our son, who was at a Jewish day school, also had something similar in his days. And when I went to school with him to discuss the issue, he sat there and he said to me, "I don't want to discuss it." And I said to him, "Jonathan, we can't deal with the issue until you express it." He said, "Well, I've expressed it twice. Nobody's cared. So I'll deal with this thing in my own way." And I said, "How?" He said, "Don't worry, I'll take care of it." And I mean, I was horrified. This thing in the principal's office. And he refused to talk. And he said, "I've raised it. I'm not going to raise it again." And you worry when a teenager says, "I'll deal with it myself." Mm, mm, mm. So I think, you know, certainly my generation, there were fewer of us in school, and there weren't the means to kind of talk. And right now, it's becoming quite explosive. That's my view.
Am I right in assuming that this is mostly a private school problem? Because I went to a public school, and it wasn't blatant. Like, obviously, you'd have that, like, those random...
And they were black and white kids.
Yes. It was, but we've never had
but
all these...
Were you the minority?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm seeing a lot, even on social media, all these kids that went to private schools, they're literally bringing out, you know, talking about their experiences. Is it mainly a private
it's
school?
It's so interesting. It's such an interesting observation. I wonder if it is
a private school, because there are fewer black kids in the private schools. But from my post and talking to people, I'm hearing comments from people who went to public schools in Cape Town. So Cape Town seems to be very different in the sense that it doesn't really matter where you went, but the private schools were far more worse. So certainly, you know, if I look at my own kids, let's say at Herschel, for a great deal of time, my daughter would have been the only black kid in her grade. And then at some stage,
just for our listeners' sake, Kim just messaged me. Apparently, Herschel is the sister school of bishops. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's the sister school of bishops.
Right.
But I mean, it really doesn't necessarily mean it should still over there because
I just want to contextualize it, because not everybody knows what these schools are.
Yes, it is. So it's very difficult, and sometimes you see it's subtle. You know, I remember my first week at school, people kept saying to me, "Is your dad a king or a chief?" And I kept saying, "But why?" Then I realized later that they were trying to figure out how I'd managed to end up in a school and be able to pay the fees. Mm-hmm. And the only way they could reconcile that was maybe I was probably my dad was a king. I mean, I didn't know a king or a chief to save my life. But you know, from a kid's point of view, it was an innocent comment. But mm-hmm. certainly, if you read into the comment, there was a lot more implied. But certainly, I think the private schools are dealing with it a lot more, because since the schools opened up,
there
are more black kids in the public schools.
Yeah, just to interrupt you, Coconut Kells tweeted, "My entire career is a result of the racism experienced behind the gates of St. Anne's. I witnessed and experienced it on a smaller scale at Redhill, but racism truly took on its most elite form at this KZN boarding school." Wake up, hashtag wake up St. Anne's.
Yeah, I must say, and I think we have to recognize that kids are often very, very cruel. And they don't even understand that they're being cruel, but they're looking for anyone who's slightly different, slightly unusual, and they target them, because that's one of the things that kids do. But you know, when my school kind of year had its one of its reunion, and a Facebook page came out, and this wasn't, it was King David, it wasn't as if there were racial issues, but people started expressing their frustration and anger at their classmates at the way they had been treated over so many things, that I think we have to inherently say, like, kids have to be made substantially more sensitive to the feelings of others. And mm-hmm. race is one of them, and race in South Africa that we have to deal with. But, like, kids have to be taught by their parents to be sensitive to difference.
I was just going to say, you know, the worrying thing about this is very often kids are just merely parroting behavior and comments from their parents. In fact, my daughter was telling us last night at dinner that they had this conversation in the English class at school, obviously on Zoom yesterday. And, you know, they were just talking about the different aspects of it. And I immediately get quite nervous as to sort of what will come out of the kids, the girls' mouths. And it was a mixed group. And I said, did any anybody, you know, when talking about Black Lives Matter, did anybody counter it with, well, all lives matter? Because I kind of expected almost, and she said, you know, Dad, not one person said that. It didn't. And I was actually so impressed with that, because either the teacher was doing an exceptionally good job of moderating the conversation, but it certainly sounded like it was a real conversation and people were bringing up real things. And this is at a Jewish day school, where they might have experienced anti-Semitism, but they've never really come across this in their own experience. And I was very impressed by the level of conversation that these 15-year-olds were having. So I am seeing good things happening, but obviously just not enough.
You see, Howard, I agree with you, but I wouldn't be quick to, you know, let the parents get off scot-free, because the children express views they hear at home.
No question.
And I'm not addressing the other Howard. So parents are far more, you know, sophisticated in how they express their prejudice. And kids, unfortunately, are just more blatant. But it also depends, because during my time, the kids around me were far smarter at expressing that it was the parents who were atrocious. So if I played rugby, it was the ref in Paarl Stellenbosch who would refuse to speak to me in English and speak in Afrikaans. And of course, I was lost half the time. And it was the parents on the sideline, the Tannies, who were screaming. I mean, they were calling me the K word. No, they weren't hiding it. They were screaming it. Fat decay. And that was the parents. I never got that kind of vile, racism from the kids, but I got it from their parents when I went to visit other schools who were sitting on the sidelines. And because it was predominantly an African school, I was fair game. And that's what they could call me. The kids were far more coy about it. But I do believe that people learn it there. When I came to Cape Town and I worked for a bank in the early 2000s, I had an Afrikaans lady who was probably 10, 15 years older than me. And she said to me, Lube, I'm struggling to deal with you because I've been raised in a predominantly Afrikaans community, and the K word is what we use to refer to black people. And we all know that black people smell, they're stupid, they're this and this and that. And says, now I have you who's my boss, and you contradict everything I've been taught. Not everything that I know, you know, that I've learned myself, but I've been taught. Mm-hmm. So quite time and time again, it's what people were taught. When I go back to these schools here in Cape Town, you know, I can see the racism. It got to an extent that when my kids had functions at school, there would be a camp on the school grounds, whatever. I'd say to my daughter, if you want to go, feel free to go, but I'm not going. I'm not joining you. I'm happy to drop you off, pick you up at the end of the evening. And if you're really that keen to sit and have pizza, I can order pizza, we can have a braai. But I would avoid those functions because I knew that they were not pleasant. And I'm not talking of mixing with kids, mixing with the parents. I've mentioned to you before how I would drive into Herschel and two mums would be speaking, blocking the road, and they wouldn't move. And they would just look at me. I've had a middle finger pulled at me by a mum who cut me in traffic. So these aren't just children. So the children learned this from their parents. The mother who pulled a middle finger was in a car with her kids. She wasn't alone. And so the trouble in the private schools, the elitism, begins at home with the parents, and the children simply learn and mimic that.
Howard Sachs, Dean Luba Maikisa joining us. We're having it's quite an intense conversation, Zanati.
Do you maybe think also the reason why these kids that went to private school kids, maybe it has to do with class? Because I feel like in public schools.
What lack of class?
Or with class issues, classism issues. Mm. Because I feel like in public schools, as much as obviously class has a lot to do with race, I feel like if you don't, if you go to the same school and if you don't end up in the same place, maybe career-wise, we can say it's because, well, of class. You didn't start out in the same place.
You're saying that everybody's on a similar playing field.
In private schools. Mm. So do you think maybe the anger is because everyone is on the same, you know, kind of class, that's why there's more anger, because it's like, then why are we not both on the same footing at the end of the day? Could that maybe be the case?
When you say ending in the same places, you mean career-wise?
Yes.
No, remember, I mean, this hatred is not even after you've left school. It's really palpable right there at school. Look, there are some challenges that you get in private school that are different. For instance, what I've seen a lot coming through now is those kids who have bursaries. The pressure on them is that the other kids will tell you that you're a scholarship kid, you know, you're a bursary kid. So when there's a discussion taking place, you get muzzled. So there is that very clear class one where somehow, I don't know how, but the skill that the kids are able to understand and perceive whose parents are paying the fees and who's here on the anniversary. And therefore there, the class issue becomes very real.
Mm.
You know, so it's not even projecting and going to your career. It's right there. And for instance, at this school where my daughter was at, she would say to me, Dad, the girls who have to change the way they speak, who come, let's say, from the Cape Flats or wherever, and this is how they speak and how they pronounce words, they have to remember that when you walk through the gates of Herschel, you have to adopt a very different accent. You have to speak differently. You have to pronounce things differently. She's had cases where a parent has looked at a child and said, goodness me, why are you speaking like that? And meanwhile, so it's almost like you have to go into, like an actor, almost, you know, strike a pose and go into character when you walk into Herschel. When you walk out again in the school, you pick up your normal accent.
But doesn't that happen
speak.
Anyway so, with teenagers? I mean, I think there's that occurring irrespective of race.
Yes, it does. But what I'm saying is that in these schools, it'll typically be very black and white. So you've got kids, for instance, I mean, who holiday overseas, who do all manner of things. So you can find, for instance, let's say a black parent who puts their kids at these schools, but they won't be able to have the same means necessarily to do things. So the competition in these schools is not just about you being at school. It's about the phone you have. It's about little things. It's about where you went for holidays. It's about the fact that you do horse riding as an extramural and you're doing this and you've got a tennis coach. So there's so many things that will show the difference between you and the other kid. And many parents, you know, who struggle to just get their kids in these schools can't then stress themselves, you know, further and start paying for a coach. They're happy to put their kid to learn tennis, but they're not going to hire a private coach. So it's quite tense over there. So what Zanati mentioned is true in the sense that then it becomes less about color. So when I moved to Cape Town, there was a reunion of St. Andrews and DSG, and I had an old schoolmate of mine. She was white at DSG, and I said, where the guys meet? He said to me, I don't go there, because those old boy and old girl reunions are less about talking about ourselves or school. They're about, Howard, what have you become? Howard is now the CEO of this entity, this listed company. This is his wealth. This is the car he drives. And she was white and said to me, I don't want to go there because I'm a chef. I'm enjoying my life. But that's only the old boy kind of fraternity when you get together.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. Luba, just to go back to a story that you recounted earlier, where this guy Jonathan approaches you and he says, like, it's obviously something that's been eating at him for years, which is interesting because it obviously speaks to the fact that he behaved outside of who he is. How do you, aside from the fact that you didn't even remember this, how do you feel about him now, knowing that A, this is how he behaved back then, but this is his response to it? What was your feeling around that?
Really no response. I mean, I was happy that he was able to face up to it, but there was no negativity. I didn't hate him. I mean, when he, you know, I haven't seen anybody from my old school for years. And I think about 4 years ago, we reconnected on Facebook. So we'd often chat about things and I could kind of get a sense of where he stood and what his views were. And they weren't very far from mine. So when he said there was an issue and I said, I was quite amused because he put this on Facebook. He didn't DM me. He just put it on Facebook and I said, Jonathan, what's the issue? Wow. And when he mentioned it, I just said, I'm happy that you dealt with it. And I showed my daughter and she says, you know, that's good. So there's no anger. There's no animosity because I know it was a certain point in time. And I know the person he is now is very different to that kid who would have thrown that insult. So I don't view him any differently. You know, I'm not sitting with anger and saying, how dare he say this? I understand in that context that kids would have said that whether he meant it or not at the time, I think it's less of an issue. To me, the issue is, what is Jonathan like now? And I think the Jonathan that I interact with today is a very different person to one who would have thrown that insult at me.
How are your thoughts in how we address this at some of the schools, and particularly the Jewish day schools?
Yeah, look, I think the things that Lupe is talking about exists everywhere. You know, King David, for example, and most of the Jewish day schools are all community schools. So you'll get kids right across the spectrum of different classes, different wealth. Mm. It's not like a normal private school where almost everyone is an upper elite class.
Right, right.
But that having been said, our schools have a problem, and the fact that our schools are not non-racial schools.
Mm.
They have a very distinct color bias to
absolutely
them. And I think that's a huge, huge problem in the way we're teaching kids how to react with the general South African population. And the moment they get out of what in effect is a white-only school into the real world, the world looks very, very different.
It is a very big concern. And the schools, the Jewish schools, are going to have to try and find a way to deal with this in a way that will equip the kids and teach them these types of lessons. Yeah, that certainly gives us a lot to think about. This is unfortunately where we do have to leave it.